Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 1st of November, the day before the midterms. And we talk about them the first hour of our program today with James Holman, national political reporter for Politico.com. He's been with us before and is a wonderful guest. He came from the Washington Post, where he covered public transportation, and he wrote for the Los Angeles Times, Washington Bureau, the Dallas Morning News, and the San Jose Mercury News. He is an honors graduate of Stanford University, studied American political history, and served as editor-in-chief of the Stanford Daily and wrote an award-winning thesis about the 1976 Republican primaries and the political ascendancy of Ronald Reagan. He is a Midwestern guy, grew up in Apple Valley, Minnesota. And as we said the last time he was with us, he traveled to all 50 states before his 18th birthday. So he will be able to explain any regional differences that we may find as we analyze what's likely to happen tomorrow. He also was at the rally in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, the rally to restore sanity. So it was a huge rally, wasn't it? We'll talk about what was happening there and what that all meant. And welcome your phone calls, as we always do. Here is our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hello, James. Thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be with you, Kathleen, and always fun to talk to other Midwesterners.
Yeah, it's good you're from the Midwest. You were at the rally over the weekend. It looked like it was a huge crowd.
It was massive.
It was.
It was hard to compare exactly because it was on the opposite end of the mall from Glenn Beck's big rally on August 28th, but it was massive. The estimates of sort of the credible estimates say that it was more than 200,000 people.
Goodness.
And they're really just, it was a gigantic crowd. What was interesting from my perspective as a political reporter is that it was much less of a political event than many expected, many who were there, and I think many who were watching on TV. So there was a lot of people there, but it wasn't necessarily fomenting behind political energy. It wasn't the kick in the pants that Democrats hoped for the key 18 to 35-year-old voters just 3 days before the midterms.
So why did all these people come to Washington?
They wanted to have fun. They wanted to,
they wanted to have fun.
See a good show. Some came because they expected sort of a political pep rally. Others wanted to show that moderation and pragmatism and sort of the stuff that Jon Stewart espouses on his show is believed by, as they see it, a silent majority. What was interesting, I talked to more than 50 people in the crowd over the course of the day on Saturday, and a lot of people really want to stand up and be counted, and they use some of the same lines about being heard and being seen as the people I talked with at the Glenn Beck rally 2 months ago.
And isn't it amazing that two comedians who have wildly popular shows were able to attract that large a crowd?
It is amazing. On average, if you include the reruns, they get about 3.5 million viewers a night, Stewart's show does. But that's a really a large crowd to get people to come out on Halloween weekend from around the country. And it definitely speaks to a mood among voters that it's not just conservatives that are anxious about the future of the country, that it's people on both sides of the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the future of the country. It's striking to me that the more you listen to how people are suffering during this recession, people are losing their jobs, small businesses are going under. I take a certain route to work, and every day, it seems week by week, the number of small businesses that are closing is fairly significant. The building across the street from us, which is a mall, which used to attract a lot of people downtown, has half the shops in it that it used to have. There really is this sense that things are not moving. People are not making as much money as they used to. They've lost their jobs. And I'm not sure who gets us out of that, but that seems to be what people will be voting on tomorrow.
Absolutely. It's all about jobs and the economy, ultimately. We did a big poll, Politico did last week, and our results made it very clear that the independent voters who have broken and for Republicans and will vote for them for Congress tomorrow, aren't doing so because the Republicans have a huge mandate for a conservative agenda. They feel like the economy isn't starting to recover. They feel like the government has expanded too far too fast, and that they want to see jobs. That's like absolutely definitively right. The number one issue, and that's really what's driving the political calculus for a lot of people as they go to the polls tomorrow.
But do they feel that the Republicans, or that a Congress that is, at least the House, indications are pretty strong that it will go into the Republicans' hands, that will be able to be translated into jobs for more people? Do they see an agenda that's out there that they're voting for? Are they hoping that it will be different? What is it?
A majority of people in our poll see the election as a referendum on Barack Obama. They're either voting for or against Obama. When you talk to a lot of independent voters, many of them simply want to put the brakes on the ambitious progressive agenda of the president, and they see divided government as a way to do that. And so they're not necessarily voting for Republicans on their plans to create jobs. In fact, in our poll, Democrats, congressional Democrats, actually had an advantage over congressional Republicans on who was best to create jobs among independents, which is pretty remarkable considering that jobs is the number one issue, and then independents are breaking decisively for Republicans.
Right. And when you say the progressive agenda of President Obama, what's interesting about that, of course, is that a lot of progressive Democrats say, what progressive agenda?
And we talked about this last time I was on with you, Catherine.
Yes.
There's just the conundrum, and it's so frustrating to administration officials I talk to, because the left feels like Obama hasn't gone far enough. We saw that in Jon Stewart's interview with Obama last Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of clearing of the air and frustration that he was too timid, that the stimulus should have been bigger, that health care should have included a public option. Meanwhile, centrists, moderates, independents all think the president has pursued this far-left agenda, and conservatives think he's a socialist when you poll. So the president is really caught between a rock and a hard place, and it's just so frustrating for them because, like Rodney Dangerfield, they just can't win.
Yeah. Let's play what if here for just a moment. We are probably better at doing that on Wednesday of this week, but let's do it today for a moment. If the president had really taken on, as many economists were suggesting, the economy instead of health care, which is a significant issue for many Americans, but had done the economy and a huge, huge stimulus program that created massive numbers of public works jobs in this country, do you think we'd be looking at something different today or not?
My colleague Glenn Thrush has a story up today about this. One economist said that if the stimulus had been $300 billion larger, which in the grand scheme of things, when you're talking about $1 trillion, isn't that much, that unemployment could be more than 1% or close to 2% lower than it is now. And if you think about employment being at 7.5% instead of 9.5%, maybe that could make the difference in some of these congressional districts that have been really hard hit by the weak economy. So there is an argument to be made. On the other hand, even the president's pollsters will admit that voters overwhelmingly on both sides actually think that there's a spending problem in Washington, and that they blame a lot of problems in general for too much spending. Even though economists would tell you that spending actually stimulates the economy, they see spending as counter to that. And there's a remarkable disconnect on that issue that all the messaging from the White House hasn't been able to really fix.
Well, and it's also true, isn't it, that even if you, I don't know what you would cut when it comes to spending, when people are asked, what would you cut? You couldn't in any way get at this deficit, which is so huge. What would you cut? What would you have to cut in order to significantly reduce the deficit?
Exactly. That's a question Republicans on the trail have been struggling to answer, because they don't want to get too much into detail about their plans to actually tackle the deficit. They're running about fixing the deficit. The Democrats are attacking Republicans because they're saying, gee, you're talking about fixing the spending problem and dealing with the debt, but you want to extend all of the Bush tax cuts, and you could only actually deal with the deficit if you got rid of essentially most discretionary spending, which isn't that discretionary, and really tackled the huge entitlement issues, which means probably cutting Social Security benefits, mm-hmm. Taking on Medicare problems, and a lot of those things aren't really popular, as you know. So Republicans have avoided going into the kind of details about how they're actually going to deal with the deficit.
Imagine, if you would please, what it will look like, and maybe things will be very different than what almost every poll in the country is saying will happen tomorrow, which is not likely. But imagine what it will be like in terms of governing to have President Obama with John Boehner as Speaker of the House and a Republican House. There also have been complaints that we haven't been able to do as much as we need to do to get this country moving forward. Will they have to move forward? Will they have to work with each other?
At a minimum, yes. They have to, for one, the most pressing thing is they're going to have to actually increase the national debt limit. We're right up against it again. And if we don't vote to increase the debt limit, America defaults on its bonds and there'll be an economic catastrophe. So it's one of those things where you have to increase the debt limit. It's just, you may disagree with the spending, but it needs to happen or else calamity will ensue. But many of the Republicans who are going to get elected tomorrow have run against voting to increase the debt limit. But at the same time, someone like John Boehner recognizes that ultimately, as much as it's uncomfortable, the debt limit has to be increased. So that'll be a tricky balancing act that they're going to have to work on. The Bush tax cuts, if no action is taken by Congress, are all going to expire. And no one really wants that to happen because that economists agree would hurt the economy. So they're going to have to reach some kind of deal on tax cuts. They're going to have to reach some kind of a deal on a budget, lest the government shut down. So there are areas where they're going to have basic cooperation. But on the broader question of whether or not we're going to see the sort of cooperation we saw even between the bomb thrower Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton after 1994 on welfare reform and community policing, it's less likely that we're going to see a lot of that coming in the next few months because the Republican leadership is under so much pressure from the right flank of the party not to compromise. They are not thinking that their mandate is to work closely with the administration. So on a lot of the issues where the two sides could work together, there's just not going to be an appetite to. Mitch McConnell, who's the Senate Majority Leader, said last week in an interview that he sees his number one job as getting a Republican elected president in 2012. And if that's your political calculation, if your number one job is to get a Republican elected, you don't want to give Obama political victories by helping him pass reform or trade bills or education reform or anything like that. So the Tea Party component of the congressional caucus that's coming in will make it really hard for Republicans and Democrats to move forward on meaningful reform, which means that if the polls are right, the next 2 years won't see dramatic reforms or major pieces of legislation.
I was watching some analysis. Actually, I watch way too much of it during election times. I just can't help myself. But I was watching some analysis last night, and they were talking about how the Midwest is really suffering economically and that we're going to see just a huge number of Republicans win gubernatorial races and Senate races all over the Midwest, whereas the results on the West Coast, which isn't quite as bad, or Colorado, might be slightly different. Would you adhere to that the Midwest is going to go Republican?
It's complicated, but yes, by and large. In a place like Ohio, the governor's race is neck and neck. Ted Strickland, the incumbent governor who the president campaigned for yesterday, could very well hold on. In my home state of Minnesota, Mark Dayton, the Democrat, has an edge. But yes, generally, you're going to see big Republican pickups in Michigan and Wisconsin. Ron Johnson is obviously favored to win. Rick Snyder is going to win in Michigan, which is a traditionally Democratic state. Obama won in a big way. Rick Snyder, the Republican former CEO of Gateway, is going to end up winning by double digits. So there is going to be a overall big Republican victories in the Midwest, and a lot of it is related to those economic issues.
Let's go to just a couple national races before, or the races that have received a lot of national attention before we go to phones. Nevada.
Harry Reid, in the fight for his political life, he is neck and neck in the polls. He's against a Tea Party candidate with a lot of baggage, who he has spent a lot of money attacking. But it's too close to call at this point. I would sort of be on the side of a lot of analysts who say that it looks like Sharon Engel, the Tea Party candidate, is probably going to win. But John Ralston, who's the really respected local commentator in Las Vegas, came out yesterday and said he thinks Reid will narrowly hang on because there's an option on the ballot in Nevada where you can check a box to say none of the above. And so it's very possible that Reid could win, but with less than 50% of the vote.
He could win because of the none of the above option. What does that say? Oh, my gosh. Alaska.
That is a three-way race that no one really knows what's going on. And when I talk,
it's wacky,
there,
isn't it? Oh.
My colleague is actually flying back right now from Alaska, and he says that it reminds him of Delaware right before the primary where Christine O'Donnell won, and that the dynamic where Joe Miller has stumbled, he was the Republican nominee who, very conservative, won upset victory against incumbent Lisa Murkowski in the primary. Then he's run into some trouble. His people arrested a reporter at a rally that caused him trouble there in the state. There were some ethics violations that had not been previously disclosed from when he was a publicly employed lawyer. Anyway, he's stumbled, but Murkowski's big struggle as she tries to make it a race between her and Scott McAdams, the Democratic nominee, is that she has to get people to write in her name correctly on the ballot. It's not necessarily an easy name to write. Republicans are increasingly nervous in Washington that McAdams, the Democrat, could actually finish second place behind Murkowski, but end up winning because a lot of the write-in ballots get thrown away. The last time someone was elected to the Senate as a write-in candidate was Strom Thurmond in the 1950s. So it's a heavy lift, and it's hard for Republicans in Alaska because they're not sure whether to vote for Miller, who seems to be slipping, or Murkowski, who is a risk because of the write-in issue.
Yeah. Do you think there's a chance the Senate could go Republican tomorrow?
There is a chance. It looks less and less likely. Even as the news gets better for Republicans on the House and in the governorship, it's an uphill battle. But every single time that control of the House has flipped since before World War II, control of the Senate has also
flipped as well.
So if there's a really huge wave tomorrow, we could see one or two upsets in the Senate that we really aren't expecting, and that could give Republicans the Senate. But odds are, like very high odds, Democrats will maintain control of the Senate, albeit narrowly, probably a 1-2 seat margin.
Let's go to phone calls. Brad is first from Whiting. Hi, Brad.
Hi there. Ronald Reagan's chief economic advisor enacted the greatest tax cuts in the history of America. I think he slashed the top marginal tax rate from something like 74% down to 29% when Reagan took office. He was on 60 Minutes last night, and he was refuting what the Republicans are spouting now, which is tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts. And he was saying that's pure insanity, that we need to let those Bush tax cuts expire for everyone, not just the rich, but the middle class also, and that not letting them expire is folly because it will explode our deficit that much more. And, they've just taken this mantra of tax cuts to the nth degree, and they say that the tax cuts are going to result in all this rehiring of employees, but we've had record tax cuts the last 10 years, and do we have record low unemployment? No, just the opposite. We have record high unemployment. What spurs businesses to hire people is if there's more demand for their product, and that would happen if the government had a bigger stimulus and was hiring people, the government themselves, and investing in the people, and then they'd have money to spend buying product, increasing demand. Just because businesses are getting tax cut doesn't mean they're going to hire people if there isn't demand amongst the lower and middle class for their product.
Brad, there is debate among economists, and there is debate among conservatives about whether you can really kill the beast. The old idea in the Reagan era was that you could cut taxes and then spending cuts would follow, and of course that didn't really happen. The Republican argument on the campaign trail, where I've spent a lot of time, is that there's a lot of uncertainty right now where businesses don't know what the tax rate is going to be either way, and as a result of the uncertainty, they're not investing. And so because we don't know what's going to happen to the tax cuts. Businesses don't know whether to invest. They don't know whether it'll make sense to hire more employees, et cetera, et cetera. So Republicans say, even if it's not a huge difference, we should extend the tax cuts, because if taxes go up, which is essentially what happens if you let the taxes expire, then that could put a chilling effect on economic growth and deny businesses the ability to have more capital. So it's economists disagree, but the Republicans have focused really heavily on the uncertainty argument.
Yeah, I heard that. I was in the car and heard that interview yesterday with Stockman, and so I was saying to Ron Digg Christie this morning, we should get him on the air because he was very interesting. He also was talking about a 15% surcharge on the wealthiest 5%, which he said would cut the deficit by 50%. I don't know if that's true or not, but that certainly is something that's worth exploring, right? For this from David Stockman.
Yeah, and there is, I mean, Stockman has been pretty, this isn't the first time that he's come out against sort of Republican fiscal policies. He was a critic of during the Bush era, too.
Right.
But there is real tension between tackling the deficit and tax cuts. And Republicans are running on tackling the deficit and extending the tax cuts. And when you press them, ultimately they'll tell you that the tax cuts are more important to them than the deficit. But a lot of voters are supporting them because they want to deal with the out-of-control spending.
Somebody give us an answer, right? I don't think anybody has an answer yet, James. People want jobs. Oh, man. Let's take more phone calls in a moment. James Holman is our guest. He is the national political reporter for Politico. It's obviously the day before the midterms, and we're talking politics this hour. We'll take more of your phone calls and also emails if you'd like to send us an email. That's talk@WPR.org. The phone number is 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just a reminder to you that we are providing election coverage tomorrow night, and it starts at 7, and it's very good coverage. There are some important races, many races that are important here in the state of Wisconsin, and we have reporters all over the state, so you'll get a insightful commentary on what's going on as well as the latest numbers. So give us a listen tomorrow night, and you will not be disappointed in the coverage. All right, let's go to Diana from Milwaukee. Hi, Diana.
Hi there. I happen to be at the rally this weekend, made an effort to get there, and with due respect, I take issue with how your guest is maybe reflecting the audience there. I went because I'm deeply concerned about the direction of our country, and that's why I went. I didn't go there just to party and be entertained at all, but I wanted this big turnout to say, hey, most of us are reasonable people who live here in America and love this country. Second of all, John Stewart's remarks, you know, you're right. He didn't sensationalize or use scare tactics that, say, Glenn Beck does. But that was his point. His point was, let's not over-exaggerate things that are with us daily, that, you know, it isn't the end of the world and the gloom and doom. Let's be reasonable, let's make decisions, and let's move forward, because that's what's lacking. And the third thing, in terms of the budget deficit, you know, everybody's like, what in the world are we going to cut? Can we talk about our war economy? And as a country, we need to shift our priorities, and until we do that, we'll still continue to get what we've got. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Diana. James.
Well, on the rally, I didn't disagree with Diana. Yeah, as I said, a lot of people there were concerned about the direction of the country. And Stewart, in a lot of ways, it was interesting because some commentators last week compared this event to the young generation's Woodstock, the current generation's Woodstock. And it was only in the sense that it was not an explicitly political event, but it was set in the most political of settings. The backdrop was the U.S. Capitol. It comes 3 days before these huge midterm elections. And it was sort of the elephant in the room. And people weren't there just to party and have a good time and see good music acts. They were there because they were concerned about the direction of the country. But a lot of people I talked to were sort of lukewarm or ambivalent about Democratic prospects next week. There were Republicans in the crowd, not that many. And there were some unenthused young people who are planning on voting but aren't planning on doing the kind of activism or get out the vote work that they did to get Obama elected 2 years ago.
You know, what's striking to me is this, and I'm not sure what it all means, but I listen on the way to work to several radio stations, and one is the African-American station in town, which does a lot of politics and does it well, good people on the air. What struck me was, A, how often the Obama ads are running to support various Wisconsin candidates on that station, which you don't hear anywhere else. And then yesterday, the New York Times CBS News poll that looked at, that kind of broke down, if you're conservative, if you're white, if you're liberal, if you're black, what you think about the next 2 years of the Obama presidency. And it is pretty remarkable to me. If you look at African-Americans in this country, 89%, and they're pretty hard hit by a recession, say that they are optimistic about the next 2 years of the Obama presidency. If you are white, you 63% say that they are disappointed with the presidency. And what does that say? What does that mean?
The enthusiasm gap among African-Americans?
Yeah. The difference in the perception of the presidency among those people of color and those who are white.
It's remarkable.
Yeah.
And I think it speaks to the fact that African-Americans really want the president to succeed, but they had high expectations when he came into office. They thought things really would change in a way that they haven't. In the Politico poll that we released last week, there was an eye-popping enthusiasm gap in terms of actual likelihood to vote tomorrow. Only 47% of African Americans said they're extremely likely to vote, compared to 72% or close to it of white voters. And white voters are leaning overwhelmingly toward Republicans. And that really could make a big difference in the election.
Hmm. I was thinking about that in terms of Hispanic voters in Arizona. I would imagine that Sharon Engel is not very popular among that group of voters. Do you think that they will show up and those numbers have been underreported in that race?
In Nevada, Latinos definitely will show up, and they're definitely backing Reid. Reid has promised to push hard on immigration. He did push hard on immigration this year. When he did it, a lot of people said that it was a pretty flagrant play to win over and galvanize those Latino voters back in Nevada. Sharon Engel, of course, was at that school in Nevada, and she told students that that made a crack that was perceived as racially insensitive about Asians and Latinos, and that actually did hurt her quite a bit. And I think Reid ended up using it in an ad against her, and that's a huge growing element of that state, and she's definitely struggling to get traction with them.
Mm-hmm. Scott in Green Bay, hi.
Good morning. Not to my original point, but I think one of the reasons there's such a difference between white and African-American, I think it's because it's a Democrat president, because the African-American vote, in good times and bad, really is a strong, strong supporter of the Democrat Party. And I think that's it more than anything else. I don't read too much into it in a race issue. But I'm hoping, like in 94, we have a president that is going to work with the Republican House. I mean, you have to remember, when President Obama got elected, I mean, he said, "I won. Elections mean things. You know, John McCain, you didn't win. I won. I've got the ball." And that kind of was his philosophy. So I'm hoping, like 94, Bill Clinton seemed to move a bit more towards the center, and things really got done. I'm hopeful, I guess, more than anything else. But the other point I wanted to make, this is kind of an interesting election cycle, especially with the Tea Party candidates. Not sure where they're going to go, but I'm wondering if your guest has any comment about how that's been covered, because I don't think I remember, and I'm paying pretty close attention. Has there ever been a positive story in the press about the Tea Parties? I mean, you've got Christine O'Donnell in Delaware, who is kind of a kook, I'll admit that, but for the press to spend so much time on her and her Tea Party affiliation, I think it was overplayed.
Oh, yeah, I think it was, too. The CNN runs her debate. Who cares? I mean, I thought that was just way
absolutely
over the top.
On that question, the Tea Party has gotten a lot of attention. Not all of it has been negative. I think that the media initially overlooked and downplayed the Tea Party movement then they probably overplayed it and tried to read the tea leaves a little too much and look for leaders of a leaderless movement. And there's definitely a lot more attention that's been paid to the more colorful characters like Christine O'Donnell. But someone like Marco Rubio, who was a big Tea Party candidate, who is a Tea Party candidate, who's going to win the Florida Senate election, he's gotten a lot of positive coverage. He had a pretty favorable piece that was the cover story in the New York Times Sunday Magazine. At Politico, we're nonpartisan, and we've done a lot to try and really understand the Tea Party movement, where people are coming from, how potent of a force it is. We've done polling of the Tea Party movement. We've studied the people who are organizing the grassroots efforts. And a lot of it is just an effort to understand what's driving them. There have been Tea Partiers by other names in previous elections. Jimmy Carter said in an interview yesterday that it was the Tea Partiers who helped get him elected in 1976. And he's talking about sort of the populist energy that was behind it. But in 1978, during the midterms, there was a surge of conservative energy that elected people who could be called Tea Party candidates by today's standards, and they sort of laid the groundwork for Reagan to win in 1980. But so that definitely has been a story that has dominated a lot of headlines, probably relative to its size and impact. Meanwhile, the independent vote, which has swung dramatically from Democrats to Republicans over the last 24 months, has not gotten as much attention, even though that's arguably just as big a story, although it's a much less colorful one.
What do you think? Somebody was making the point over the last couple of days that the Tea Partiers have really been able to fuse a lot of energy into the Republican Party, and more people will go to the polls, that there is just more enthusiasm, maybe because of press coverage, maybe because of these candidates are more exciting in some way than some of the other Republican leaders who are more mainstream Republicans. They've done a lot to spice
right.
up the Republican
Party. It's a mixed
bag,
right? Because I think most Republican strategists I talk to here in Washington now see, at least tomorrow, Tea Party energy as a net plus.
Uh-huh.
But on the other hand, Tea Party candidates may cost Republicans seats in Alaska, where there's that three-way race, in Delaware, where Mike Castle, the establishment Republican, who was toppled by Christine O'Donnell in the primary, almost certainly would have won the general election, but
mm-hmm.
Christine O'Donnell is not going to win tomorrow. So there are these places where Colorado, Ken Buck, who's in a much tighter race with Michael Bennett than Jane Norton, the establishment Republican, would have been. So there is a lot of energy and excitement, and it's going to drive a lot of people to the polls. But the Tea Party energy also nominated candidates who are going to struggle to win in general election.
And then it will be very interesting to see how the Republican Party takes them into the fold, if that's possible, if they become less extreme in some of their viewpoints, or it seems to me as though that will be a difficulty for the Republican Party. Do you think or not?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be the big story of 2011, looking at the Republican conference. It's a governing problem. If you look at someone like Bunning from Kentucky, who held up an unemployment insurance benefit bill for several days this spring, instead of one Bunning in the Senate, there's going to be half a dozen. And so Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republicans, it won't be able to just count on their votes because they'll be less predictable. On the other hand, some of them almost certainly are going to change once they find the realities of governing and being in the legislature. A lot of them don't have legislative experience, so they've never had to compromise and find middle ground before. And some will be one-term wonders. They'll come to Washington and they'll be here more to make a point than to necessarily get things done or get laws passed, and
mm-hmm.
they'll leave in either 2 or 6 years when their terms end. On the other hand, while the Tea Party's been getting so much energy, a lot of Republican candidates who are going to win tomorrow are actually very moderate or conservative, but more establishment Republicans. If you look at Ohio, Rob Portman is going to win that Senate seat. Former chairman of the, formerly in the House. In Missouri, Roy Blunt is going to get elected. He's as establishment as they come. And a lot of the Republicans running for re-election are going to win, David Vitter in Louisiana. Those people aren't Tea Party candidates by any stretch, and they will vote consistently Republican once they get here.
Yeah. Here's an email from John in Medford. Please explain the common perception that government spending is causing a drag on the economy and hurting job creation. This is in spite of the facts. The stimulus worked, TARP worked, and the General Motors bailout helped save that company and jobs. In addition, nearly all of the economic indicators are headed in the right direction, yet people decided 6 or 8 months ago to punish Obama and the Democrats. Why can't we look at the real facts?
The listener sounds just like Obama administration. The reason for that disconnect is that people aren't feeling like the economy is better.
Right.
And it's much harder to sell a depression averted than a recession that exists now. Obama and his surrogates have been going around trying to make the case to people that, look, we took these actions which were unpopular, but they saved the economy, and that was the right thing to do. But that's just a much harder argument to make when people are still unemployed and or have jobs where they're earning less than they were before, or feeling the squeeze. And so even though the stimulus may have created some jobs, it doesn't feel that way to people. And Republicans, by coming out so strong against it early, really won the messaging war on that.
Interesting. Let's go to Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I think that the Stewart situation is not a situation for celebration, because there's nothing to laugh about. In fact, it's very sad, the ignorance that's manifest in a couple of ways. First, it seems like craziness is tolerated. Sharon Angle can talk about Second Amendment remedies if the conservatives don't win, and a supporter of Rand Paul in Kentucky grinds his foot into a woman's head, creating a new category of hate crime called armed whack jobbery. And so we have that on the one hand, and then on the other hand, realities fly over people's heads. There's a commercial recently on TV about a lady who's calling for service, and she deals with a guy named Peggy, who is passes a phone around a circle of people speaking in Eastern European accents, and people laugh at the commercial, but it's not funny because it ignores the fact that the jobs were outsourced and that the process of setting up the legislation was done by people that the conservatives voted for in the first place, and they helped eliminate the jobs. And people ignore the realities and look at the trivial things.
James.
Jim, there's so much anger out there right now. There's so much frustration. People are struggling economically. And as history has shown us time and time again, when people become desperate, they lash out. And that's what you're seeing on the right and the left. And this has been a very crude, very personal, very negative election as a result of that voter anger, which is very palpable.
This has been one negative election season, hasn't it? Ooh-wee.
Amazing to think about. At the beginning of the year, we wouldn't have seen a lot of this coming. And even in the last few days, we've seen a lot of candidates sort of throw in the kitchen sink. Democrats who didn't think they were vulnerable and maybe had some opposition research on their opponent but wanted to keep the kids out of it or keep the ex-wife out of it. During the final days, when the elections are tight, they'll throw everything they've got.
Thanks, Jim, very much for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. It's All Things Political, and we welcome your phone calls for James Holman. He is national political reporter for Politico, worked for The Washington Post, also for the L.A. Times, Washington Bureau, Dallas Morning News, and the San Jose Mercury News. But most importantly, he is a Midwestern guy, so he's got Midwestern sensibilities and a good sense of honesty and intelligence. He's from Apple Valley, Minnesota. I'm Kathleen Dunn. More phone calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we're happy to welcome to the air Eric Larson. Eric is from Wisconsin, as you know, and he became on October 14th the first person ever to reach the South and North Poles and the summit of Mount Everest within 1 year. And he did this to draw attention and to get a firsthand observation of what global warming was doing to the planet. He's an incredible explorer and a very nice person, and he will join us to talk about his latest accomplishment, huge accomplishment, after the news at 10 o'clock. All right, let's go back to phone calls for James. Mark in La Crosse is our next caller. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I just tuned in, was just listening to you guys, and I haven't been listening the whole time, but I think it's going to be a political bloodbath. I think a lot of people in Wisconsin and around the country are absolutely fed up with both sides, but particularly since the Democrats have all three majorities in the Senate, the House, and the Senate and the House, both majorities, and the presidency, that, Obama came in and he was supposed to be a uniter. And I haven't seen any bipartisanship. I see him and Pelosi saying it's basically his way or no way. And I think that Americans aren't happy with that. And I think also, I love the ad that Ron Johnson runs about how many attorneys are in the Senate and how many I don't think there's a single manufacturer in there. I think this is the time for outsiders to come in. If you're in there, obviously you haven't been doing your job. The economy is horrible, 10%. Obama inherited one of the best economies in the world, the best economy in the world. And you can spin it any way you like, saying that it was on a downward trend, but it is. Our country is still the most powerful economy in the world. And you can't get that thing running, there's a problem. He's had 2 years. I'm extremely frustrated, and I'm going to voice my opinion in the polls tomorrow, in the voting tomorrow.
Okay, thanks for the call, Mark. James.
Well, Mark, just expressed what a majority of voters, I think, in La Crosse are going to think when they go to the polls tomorrow, and that's why Ron Johnson is the favorite to beat Russ Feingold, a race that at the start of the year I wouldn't have told you was competitive. And Mark articulated it in a very concise way what a lot of voters feel, a lot of those independents who backed Obama. He obviously won Wisconsin, I think, by 14 points in 2008, and Obama would lose if he was on the ballot statewide in Wisconsin today to a generic Republican. And it's because of that feeling and the sentiment that Mark just expressed.
Now, Democrats would counter that the president has tried to work with Republicans, particularly on health care reform, and bringing together Republican leaders to hash this out, and that it just didn't go anywhere.
Absolutely, and they have. They did. The Republicans made a strategic decision to be the party of no, that they decided politically they could gain more by blocking the president from having a lot of accomplishments that he could point to as bipartisan. And Republicans weren't able to block the most significant legislation in decades. Healthcare is such a massive piece of reform. The financial regulatory reform bill, which people aren't talking about. The stimulus, which is so significant. And just a lot of other much smaller bills. So they tried to work with the Republicans. Republicans didn't work with them. They still passed a lot of legislation. And that doesn't change the fact that voters just feel like Democrats have gone their own way and haven't tried to reach across the line.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mark. We go to Nancy in Madison. Hi.
Yes, hi. I'm curious about what effect newspaper endorsements have now. It seems to me that their role must be diminished because every major newspaper in Wisconsin has endorsed Feingold as their preferred candidate and has written long editorials supporting him. But is anyone reading them or taking them into consideration? And has the other way that people get their information through the Internet and blogs and that sort of thing, has that just taken over what the traditional role used to be?
Yeah, newspapers have a way less, newspaper endorsements have way less influence than they used to. And there's also mistrust of big institutions, including the media. We saw that at the Jon Stewart rally over the weekend, where Jon Stewart focused his ire on extremes in the left and the right within the media. So I think a lot of voters, especially independents, are just sort of turned off by the mainstream press. And so as part part of that, the endorsements of the big papers don't carry the weight that they used to.
Let's go next to, thanks very much, Nancy, for your call. Joe in Fox Point. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Great show, as always. I just had a kind of a general comment. I'm dismayed and disappointed at the viewpoint of voters who would choose to send to represent them in Congress people who have no experience whatsoever running for political office and demonstrate kind of a intellectual deficit and a kind of a bizarre worldview. People from, well, start with Ron Johnson and Rebecca Clefish, Sharon Angle, Ron Paul, Christine O'Donnell, Joe Miller, Carl Palladino. It frightens me and it saddens me that people are being so ignorant about voting these people into important political offices. That's all.
Thanks for your comments, Joe. James, you want to respond?
Well, Joe puts his finger on it. Voters this year want outsiders, even if they don't have legislative experience. In fact, experience this year is a disadvantage. Every candidate who has tried to run on pork they brought home for the district and earmarks they've had and important committee chairmanships they hold has really been hurt by it. The only place where it's really helping is Washington State, where Patty Murray is narrowly ahead of Republican Dino Rossi, who's an outside businessman. And Murray is held out for a role in the Senate leadership. But if you look at someone like Blanche Lincoln, she's the chairwoman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, the first person ever from Arkansas to chair that very important agriculture committee, has done a lot for Arkansas. But voters just don't care, not this cycle. The Republican there is going to win by double digits.
And what about Murray? Is she going to pull it off?
Murray probably will, and that's one of the reasons I'm pretty confident that Republicans won't win control of the Senate, because I think at the end of the day, Murray wins, but narrowly.
Huh. So at the end of the day, which could be very early into the morning, right?
It's Washington State, so it's the West Coast.
Yeah, right.
I remember that's a state with a history of recounts. In fact,
right.
Dino Rossi got into an extended recount when he challenged Christine Gregoire for governor, and it was within a couple hundred votes, and I think he was initially ahead, and then she overtook him during the recount. And it's a mail-in state, so it'll be a very late night.
Yeah. Rick in Fond du Lac is next. Hi, Rick.
Hey, good morning. I got a couple of points related to, macroeconomics and then the political system in general. And I've called before, but it's been a while since I've spoke. But I'm a business owner. I own about a $15 million company, and I've been fortunate to build that and grow that business in a down economy. It's more consultative-based. But this misnomer that people will not hire people based on tax structure, it's just not right. I deal with a lot of CFOs and presidents of Fortune 100s all the way down to small emerging companies, and there's never in the boardroom debates about the tax structure. Insurance is talked about more, but there's this misnomer that the tax structure affects hiring. Number one thing that affects hiring of people is demand. And demand in this country continues to go down because people aren't buying goods. And you can't buy goods when your discretionary income is not there.
Right.
And obviously, with the current political situation of where we're at, people, and I've called before about this, the Democrats and Republicans, people, we need hardcore structural change the way this country does business. The two parties, people have such a short memory of the Republicans dominated the House and the Senate, and they put us in a tough situation. And now the Democrats, people have a real short attention span for this now. The problem is it's the system is broke. The macroeconomics that we have in this country, when 70% of your gross domestic product is on consumables, you've got to free up people to buy product. This country went from a manufacturing society to a consumption society, and we freed up credit. And we freed it up too largely because we were converging from a manufacturing to a consumption society.
All right. I need to hold you there, Rick, because we're almost out of time. James, can you respond in about 30 seconds?
Sure. I think voters want that structural change. And one of the reasons they're willing to vote for Tea Party candidates who hold views that are out of the mainstream on a lot of issues is because they think that those folks aren't going to go compromise, that they're really going to push for those structural fundamental changes in the way the government and the country works. And that energy is what's driving the Tea Party and will drive big Republican gains tomorrow.
Mm. So any final thoughts about tomorrow? You're going to be
it's
up.
It's going to be a tough night for Democrats. The wave is there. The question is, how big will that wave be? How many races that are within the margin of error in the polls right now are going to break for Republicans? And who are the Democrats that have found a way to survive in this climate, and how did they do it? That'll be the question we can talk about on Wednesday.
Okay. James, thank you so much for being with us. Always a great pleasure.
Always great to be with you, Kathleen. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, James. James Holman, national political reporter for Politico.com. He did go to the rally for sanity in Washington over the weekend, and he writes extensively, of course, about politics. He is from Apple Valley. What a nice place to be from, isn't it? I'm from Apple Valley, Minnesota, and he has studied American political history for a long time and has written for the Washington Bureau of the LA Times, the Dallas Morning News, and the San Jose Mercury News. We will have complete election coverage, and there are many important races here in the lovely state of Wisconsin. So please join us for our election analysis tomorrow night at 7. And, of course, we will be providing talk analysis all day on Wednesday. This is the Ideas Network.